Following delays planned and unplanned, we're back with our Flophouse Honors the Troops episode, where we discuss The Happiest Millionaire. Everyone, and welcome back to the Flophouse. I'm Dan McCoy.
I'm Stuart Wellington.
And I'm Elliot Kalin.
We're back, coming at you from Hurricane Alley.
Back again.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, did you just come up with that, Dan?
Yep. That's all me.
Okay.
No one has ever said a natural disaster and then put the word alley behind it before.
Nope, never. Kate and then put the word alley after it.
Sure, certainly. A hit television show of many years, but never Hurricane Alley.
Yeah. And Crime Alley, that exists. Enough shilly-shallying and dilly-dallying, guys.
Okay. Yeah, we had some technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I purchased some new cords.
Ouch. And they look great on you.
Uh-huh. I put on my new corduroy pants, and then I purchased some new wires for the podcast.
Okay.
And,
Why?
Because we were getting hacked, not hacked, but it was like a pirate radio station, say.
Was it a pirate radio station?
No, I don't think so.
I think
so.
It was just a radio station.
A radio station.
A law-abiding radio station.
It was radio, as Elvis Costello would say.
It was the radio station that only plays the soundtrack from the movie Radio, starring Cuba Gooding Jr.
Yep. But
Radio Flyer?
Yeah, Radio Flyer.
Mm-hmm.
Can we get a new guy to replace Stuart?
Stuart works for pancakes. So.
Pancakes?
Yep, cakes made in the shape of pants.
So, I am on the fire today. So we were trying to do a show last time. We
watched
were all
Beastly.
Psyched about Beastly. You loved it, Elliot, right?
I thought it was one of the top 10 movies of the never.
Okay. So
it was never good in any way.
Yeah.
But
so we watched that, but then it all fucked up, right?
Well, halfway through, Stuart, who usually pays no attention to such things.
I thought it was Elliot.
No, it was me.
That.
Oh, okay. Well, yes. Okay. All right. Sorry.
Who doesn't pay attention to stuff, Dan?
Come on. Joke's on you.
We sound completely different.
Elliot noticed that the levels were going all over the place.
Yeah, they were all up in there.
Mm-hmm. And so we
turned
it off.
The levels were really high, even though we weren't saying anything. Like, during pauses, the levels would be really high.
Which I know you're thinking, you guys watch Beastly, you probably couldn't stop talking. But no, there were a lot of pauses.
Surprisingly enough. And not just the kind of pause you'd find on a beast.
Yeah. And, yeah.
Art history.
Apparently some of the
like
shielding in the mic cables was stripped or something.
Yeah.
You don't need to bore me with the technical details there, Professor.
Well, it's
how, like, remember,
let's go to the joke.
Remember, Stuart, how your braces used to pick up radio signals?
My racist?
Yeah, how you being a racist, you used to listen to that white power radio signal.
Oh, my braces.
Yeah.
Okay.
Panzer radio.
Sure.
It's like that.
I don't know. I had braces for years, and they never picked up radio
Maybe
signals.
Maybe I'm thinking of Gilligan.
I think you're thinking of something that never happened.
But we're back, baby.
Yeah.
And badder than ever.
Yeah.
Right.
And this time it's personal.
Sure.
And this time we have the window open. So you might hear
that motorcycle and think we were farting. But no, that was a motorcycle outside the
yeah.
window. That's one of those things where I'm sure we can hear it, but it doesn't pick up on the recording.
Wait, when
people,
we fart?
Well, no, that motorcycle outside. And people
we
listening.
Hear sirens. I've heard sirens actually on
oh,
the recording
okay.
before.
But not
that's
our
That's because we're so hot.
Mm-hmm.
Because it'll be a hot riff.
Mm-hmm. Because the heat is on. It's on the street.
And get
so,
out of the kitchen.
We watched a movie today,
okay,
right?
Wow.
Guys?
Stuart, for once, being the slave driver
well,
here.
Well, Stuart's saying no shilly-shallying, no dilly-dallying. Like the lead character, not really, of the movie.
Yeah, let's talk about this. So,
this was a special request.
This is a special request. This is for Lieutenant, last name withheld, in Iraq.
One of our boys overseas.
Uh-huh. We made an offer.
He couldn't refuse.
We said, give us 3 movies.
In 30 minutes or less.
We will pick one, and we'll do a
in
show
a
about it.
I'm going to finish
because,
every sentence you make.
He and his wife sent a request email a while ago, mm-hmm. and you, instead of reading the email, just...
Ignored it,
right?
I don't care for our listeners.
I think
I don't
you added them to your spam filter.
Sure.
I said unsubscribe.
Which is weird to say to just an email that someone wrote to you. It's not a list. It's...
Yeah, did you just say that to your computer, or did you?
It was like in Star Trek 4. I picked up the mouse. I don't know why I'm using a mouse because I've got a trackpad, but I picked it up and I said, computer.
And the computer
unsubscribe.
Said, that's not how I work, Dan. Yeah. Wait, so when you talk to the computer, you're more flamboyant? Computer!
Well, close window.
That was my impression of James Doohan in Star
like
Trek
Frank
4.
Frank Nelson.
Hello, computer.
I crack my knuckles like he does in the movie, and I say,
"You really know Star Trek 4." I gotta say,
it's a classic scene.
Of all the movies to know the scenes that well, yep. Star Trek 4 is not. It's
the
one of them.
Look. I'm just looking one, right? For the nuclear vessels
it's
in
the
Alameda,
one where they go to Wales.
Okay,
it's called Star Trek 4: The Rainy Vacation.
the quest for bowels, yep. And
they went to the wrong place.
Mm-hmm. So instead, Lieutenant Last Name Withheld.
Star Trek 4, Irritable Vowel Syndrome.
Yeah.
Man, you still got it.
Yep. Just because I've been on break for over a week. The jokes don't stop.
They just irritate people more because you're not getting paid for them.
You
like,
better
please,
believe it.
Could you not make these jokes? You're just a human being in like regular life.
What's bad is when I throw the sound bites and the sound bite doesn't play.
Yeah. So we were given a couple options.
You asked him if he had any requests for movies mm-hmm. we could watch. Right?
We could watch, and we didn't do a couple of them. We settled on the third. Well, Stuart and I, you had seen it, right?
What?
I know I had seen Splice. Did you see Splice?
No, I haven't seen Splice.
I haven't seen Splice.
And I have to
Andrew
admit,
and Brody don't get along
again,
so well.
Did not hate Splice.
And what was the other choice?
The other choice was a direct DVD thing of recent vintage. I can't remember. It just looked like your average romantic comedy. So we settled on. The most challenging of the three.
Oh, by far.
Which was a 1960s Disney live-action musical, nearly 3 hours long, something like 2 hours and 53 minutes.
That includes intermission and overture, though.
Yeah, but the intermission was only like 2 minutes long.
Yeah, the overture was about a minute
intermission
and a half.
They knew
so let's say
to get back into it.
The actual action yeah. of the film is 2 hours and 40 minutes, because those are short overtures yeah. and intermissions.
And
so.
What was the name of this movie, Dan?
It was called The Happiest Millionaire.
So this is one of those classic Disney musicals. Everyone's seen it,
mm-hmm.
right up there with Mary Poppins and Pete's Dragon and the 120 Days of Sallow. And
I think that you... I think you're misremembering.
That's the Disney musical version of Sallow, the 120 okay. Days of Sodom.
sure. No, this is a forgotten piece of Disney lore.
Now, is it rightfully forgotten?
Oh, God, yes. It, despite starring...
Fred McMurray.
Yeah. Live-action Disney mainstay. Yeah.
And Greer Garson.
Mm-hmm. A young Leslie Ann Warren in her first role.
Yep, lesbian Ann Warren.
No.
Is she a lesbian?
I don't know.
Her name sounds kind of like she is.
Like a lesbian.
Yeah. Thanks, Stuart, for clarifying. But
figured if I backed you up on this, Dan might agree.
I appreciate it.
I don't think so.
And this was, according to Wikipedia, this is the last movie Walt Disney had any hand in at mm-hmm. Disney because he died during
the election. In the middle of it.
He died, I assume, while watching it because it's about 30 hours
shame.
Long. and it's what's weird is that it's based on a true story.
Mm-hmm. A true story that sounds...
Sounds
much
awesome.
More interesting than anything that's on screen.
It turns out there was this man. I'm going to have to resort to Wikipedia to remind me some of the details. Turns out there was a man named Anthony J. Drexel Biddle. He was a Philadelphia millionaire who was obsessed with muscular Christianity and boxing
mm-hmm.
and hand-to-hand combat. And he kept alligators as pets. And he's kind of this eccentric Philadelphia millionaire.
That sounds like that would make a really interesting movie,
yeah,
Elliot.
He was a boxing enthusiast. He trained the Marines in hand-to-hand fighting during World War I and World War II. Really interesting stuff. So how much of that was on screen during the 3 hours running time?
Well, I mean, those elements were there.
Yeah, he did have alligators, and he did occasionally box people.
Yeah, but most of the film was about his daughter's boring romance with Blandy Blanderson.
It took place in 1916, and it opens with an Irish guy played by Tommy Steele singing about how great life is, basically. He sings a song called Fortuosity.
Yeah, he made that word up, right?
Fortuosity.
Sometimes things just fall into place. He's made up a word, Fortuosity, but there is a word for that, Serendipity. So mm-hmm. why bother? Make up a new word. But that's besides the point. He gets a butling job at the Biddle Estate mm-hmm. and then disappears for long periods of the movie,
mm-hmm.
even though, in theory, he's supposed to be the narrator and hero.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's hard to say who the main character of this film
is. It's an ensemble work, yeah.
I mean, an ensemble in the sense that everyone is pretty much equally boring.
But yes. Fred McMurray is this crazy millionaire, and his daughter falls in love with...
I mean, what makes you think he's crazy, though?
Well, he's got alligators for pets.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
He's obsessed with boxing.
Continue.
And the Bible. He runs a Bible camp in his house.
Okay.
He's obsessed with pushing America into the war.
Yes, that and boxing.
That is his raison d'etre.
Doesn't he almost World exclusively eat chocolate cake or something?
In the beginning they say he's on a chocolate cake diet, although that goes out the window. We never see him eating chocolate cake, I don't think.
Yeah.
And his daughter falls in love with the young scion of a New York business family, but he dreams...
Named Angie. He's a man.
Angie mm-hmm. is the guy, mm-hmm. and the girl's name is Steve.
Wait, what?
No, the girl's name is Cordelia.
Oh, yeah.
But they call her Cordy.
Mm-hmm.
They do.
I mean, that's what I call her.
Yeah, but anyway.
Because she's like a cord of wood.
Yeah, I mean, that's wow. the association.
Horrible thing to say about somebody. But
Leslie Ann Warren looked lovely, and she went on to a great career in other films.
What else did she do?
I guess she's most known for she was on the television show Taxi.
The show Taxi. Travis Bickle kills a different gangster.
No, the one Taxi with Andy Kaufman and Danny DeVito, Judd Hirsch, Christopher Lloyd.
DC Cab.
I thought that was Rhea Perlman.
No, you're thinking of.
Yeah, Rhea Perlman.
You're thinking of
the bin you keep your pearls in.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Also, Leslie Ann Warren was in the movie Clue as Miss Scarlet.
Okay.
You remember Scarlet O'Hara? Right.
Yeah. A pretty lady. Here, not much.
Not much. Well, I mean, there's a lot of singing and dancing. She falls in love with a guy who wants to go into the automobile business, but his mother says no.
Yeah, he sings a song about how he wants to go to Detroit.
Yeah, but Detroit
the
is where
only, the only song of its.
Yeah.
I think he refers to it as the Golden City.
The past is hilarious.
Yes. But this movie was made in the 60s when Detroit was like riding high, basically. Mm-hmm. So they had no idea that people would watch this movie again 44 years later and be like, oh, Detroit, that's a shithole.
That hellscape? What?
This.
Oh, my God.
The place that might be putting up a statue of the robot cop that trod its post-apocalyptic soil. They're not going to put up that statue, by the way, Stuart, I'm sorry to say.
I'm still trying to get over that. So was he trying
that's to
go to Detroit?
That's all Detroit has to be proud of.
Was he going to Detroit so he could test his mettle against an army of chuds and biker gangs?
No, so he could make his name in the automobile business, okay. Which at that point was just starting to get really big.
Mm-hmm.
But his mother is very condescending to the Biddles and does not approve of the car plan. The marriage
is a millionaire, right?
Yes. The marriage is briefly broken up. Then the butler saves the day by getting the young man into a bar fight. And everything's
having
okay.
Having him arrested. So he can't leave town.
They go to prison. Everything's okay. He gets bailed out. And the end.
Yeah.
Oh, and
the guy learns to defy his mother and go off to Detroit.
And be his own man in Detroit. And Mr. Biddle, in a last-minute de ex machina, based in true story, is asked by the Marines to become a captain in the Marines and train the Marines in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah, as America is entering the war. Now,
that's the end of the movie. So just as the movie got interesting, the movie is over. But that's
a very simple story.
Does that story sound like it should be 3 hours long? No.
No. Not at all.
But,
I mean, the beautiful production design, the sterling,
oof.
The
oof.
Just spectacle, the pure spectacle
it's
of it,
to
right,
see
guys?
A 3-hour Disney musical. They had money. A Disney musical that has maybe 3 locations. Mm-hmm. For most of its running time, the living room, the other living room, and the boxing room.
There's a bit of the crocodile room.
Occasionally they go alligator room.
Yeah, the alligator
crocodiles
room.
Are found in a different part of the world.
Sorry.
Occasionally
I'm thinking of Rocket Crocodile in
the world
of
tomorrow. Eventually, there is a whole...
All America can't stop thinking about Rocket Crocodile in the world
when
tomorrow.
When are you going to finish
Elliot,
the script?
Please.
I'm sorry. Look, it's inspiration. It has to come to me.
Sure.
But yeah, there is he has alligators for pets, and they really... take a long time before they show you these alligators.
Yeah,
they talk about them a lot.
That sounds exciting.
I expected it was going to be like Norm's wife or something from Cheers. Like you're going to hear about them all the time, but you're never going to see them.
But they actually had alligators. They were just holding out on them.
They had
whole that's the thing.
Musical number where
they waited like an hour before you see them.
Yeah.
That this is going to sound awesome, but it's not. But the alligators are in tanks that get frozen into ice. So they have alligators in blocks of ice that they're thawing out in front of a living room fireplace. The alligators get loose and are chasing the maid everywhere, chasing the cook everywhere. There's alligators all over the place, and Tommy Steele has
People are tossing alligators to each other.
They're throwing alligators at each other.
I think they're like caimans or something.
They're really small. But then Tommy Steele is dancing around an alligator as he pulls it along with a leash. And the alligator, it's edited as if the alligator is supposed to be high-stepping with him. And this sounds great to describe it, like an alligator dance number. Yeah, awesome. But no, it's terrible.
I mean, it's better than large other swaths of the movie.
Oh,
by far
it's the best thing in the movie. Yeah.
If we were going to edit this movie down, that's one of the pieces we would probably keep.
Yeah, we'd keep
maybe do some slow motion alligator dancing, if you ask me.
Keep the alligator scene. There's a scene where Fred McMurray beats up a Marine that's kind of fun.
That's about a minute and a half.
There's a long bar fight scene that could be cut by at least two-thirds. But
it felt like it was right out of Pete's Dragon.
There's a lot of scenes where characters will just be like, but that's when I do this. What? But what they – like people being shocked at things that are not very shocking,
mm-hmm.
like the idea of boxing.
Well, I mean, we got to put ourselves in that mindset. Apparently, he was...
He was a pioneer in terms of getting boxing to be socially acceptable.
Yeah.
But then show us that. Like, don't just...
Yeah, there was a real...
There's a lot of dead air. A lot of dead air in this movie.
As I was saying to Elliot, like, you know, there's this idea out there that a story has to have a reason to be told. And this film may have had a reason at the beginning, but it seems to have lost it along the way.
This is maybe the most meandering studio movie I've ever seen.
I mean,
like, if John Sayles had made this movie, I would understand why it was meandering. Or, like, Wong Kar-wai. But this is a Walt Disney live-action musical. And it's just kind of like, well, let's sit here for a while.
There are several ways you could have approached the story and made it somewhat interesting. I mean, we were talking about how, like, it could have been interesting.
Make the butler a cartoon, right?
Make him like a cartoon penguin, yeah.
No,
but if the butler was, like, the clever immigrant butler who had to save his wacky millionaire employers.
Like, through his – they get themselves into trouble and he cleverly gets them out of it.
That would have been an interesting take. If it was a more straight-up – actual historical tape focusing on the Fred McMurray character, that would have been interesting.
Yeah.
Instead, they sort of focus on the daughter and her bland romance, and then they throw in a bunch of other stuff that doesn't associate with that.
Like alligators.
If it was told from the perspective of the alligators, what do you think?
That would be good.
They spend most of their time just in a tank in the greenhouse.
If it was more like...
There's that really long sequence where he's like running around trying to get the big alligator back in its tank when he's in the greenhouse, and he keeps accidentally walking through the same pool with alligators in it.
Yeah.
That was pretty great.
Your enthusiasm just burns out of you.
You're saying, though, you wanted to be more like Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, with a lot of more like lizard POV shots.
Yes. Yes, a lot of them.
But it's weird because the butler's set up as your main character because you spend the first, like, 57 minutes is one musical number of the butler just...
I think you're overestimating.
That's what it felt like. The butler, like, dancing around town, just interacting with ordinary Philadelphians, singing about how his philosophy of life and asking directions to the same policeman, like, seven times.
Yeah.
And then he gets in, he's hired as the butler, and then you don't see him for, like, an hour.
Yeah.
Where, like, every now and then he pops and goes... Oh, hello, Mr. Biddle. Well, okay then. You know, and off he is.
He sings that one.
He doesn't have a very good Irish accent in this
true.
Either.
He sings that big thing about even if he becomes an American, he'll still be Irish.
That's true, yeah. He has a very racist part of that where he's like, even if I go to China, they'll say, ching wong ching jung ching, Irish. And it's like, all right, that's even in 1967, that was not cool.
I'm going to pretend I didn't hear that because I want to like somebody in this movie.
I mean, it makes sense that this everything that you read about the behind the scenes, and there's not like a lot. I mean, we just looked at Wikipedia.
We watched, there's the 3-hour documentary, The Happiest Millionaire, Behind the Happiest Millionaire, and there was that book,
but
The Not So Happiest Millionaire.
It seems like this must have been a real struggle to put this movie together. Like, they did not know what they were doing at a certain point.
I mean,
they're like, if we keep throwing money at this, maybe...
It feels like Walt Disney read the book it's based on, which was written by the real-life daughter, and said, I want to make a movie of this. I'm nostalgic for the time period this movie's set in. Like, let's do it. And then other people tried to figure out a way to film this unfilmable book that Walt Disney wanted them to film. That's my assumption. Then that he died halfway through it, so they were like, oh, let's just throw this thing together. Like, let's just get it out there. Because there's a lot of, like, I'm sure if you grew up in 1916, you'd be like, oh, those days, I remember them. Oh, what an enjoyable romp.
People liked cars and boxing and such.
Exactly.
People wanted to move to Detroit. Beautiful Detroit.
Yeah. Get in on the ground floor.
Of filth.
Stuart, what was your favorite musical number from this?
Do you remember any of them?
Because
I only remember Fortuosity and No Shilly Shallying, No Dilly Dallying.
Well, No Shilly Shallying, No Dilly Dallying is probably the best.
That's the song that leads to the bar fight.
And, of course, the He's Irish No Matter Where He Goes bit.
Yeah.
Or the bit where the two girls in the private school are teaching each other how to flirt with boys.
Oh, Pom Pom Poi or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Yep.
That was a scene that, if this movie was made, like, even just 10 years later, there would be some sort of making out that would have resulted
in
that.
I don't know about that.
This seemed like a tension to that scene.
There were a lot
scene,
of moments in that scene where it seemed like the girls were about to start making out.
Teach me how to flirt. And then they both get on, like, the same bed, and they're, like, gazing into each other's eyes.
I think you're projecting.
I think we're just a little too versed in lesbian...
I'm thinking of my own lesbian experiences.
Yes, your own college experiences. I think we're a little too versed
in...
Well,
college is the time to experiment, Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true.
With science.
That reminds me of one of my favorite lines from a softcore porn movie, where it's two girls, and one of them says to the other, they say college is the time to experiment, so let's get experimenting. And they just start making out. It's the lamest.
And so that's when they invent their web slingers.
Right? Yes, exactly. They invent their web shooters and their spider tracers.
Yep.
Their utility belts. But I think we're a little too versed in porn for straight men that involves two women together, because so that anytime that two women are sitting on a bed or one says – or like even one puts her face a little too close to the other one, we're like, well, of course they'll start making out now.
Well, if there's two women and a bed in the same room.
That's the natural end point.
Seems inevitable.
That's the end game, right?
Samuel Beckett's end game, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was that song.
We just talked about some sweet musical numbers.
Pom Pom Poi. Was there? Well, there are other musical numbers too.
Rum Tum Tugger.
There's the song.
No, there was the bits where we like fast forward a little bit, but we were still able to wait. No, but we didn't fast. We could still hear it.
We fast forwarded. It was 3 hours long. Stuart needs to get to work after this. We fast forwarded on the mode where you can still hear what they're saying.
Yeah. So when Fred McMurtry or whatever.
Larry McMurtry.
When he was singing that song
when he was done writing the Last Picture Show. Yep. He starred in The Happiest Millionaire.
Yeah, when he was singing that song about how we should go to war with Germany or something for those Marines. That was another song. And then he ends up beating that dude up. And then they sing the conclusion of it.
And they also – he learns jiu-jitsu. The fiancé wins him over by showing him a jiu-jitsu move. So like, and that teaches him something he's never seen before about hand-to-hand fighting. Mm-hmm. So this is a movie about The Happiest Millionaire. His relationships are based on hand-to-hand combat. And yet it was very boring.
Yeah.
Didn't he have a couple of sons or something at the very beginning?
Yeah, they kind of dissolved, I think, after a while. They may have gone into the Marines.
Boxing,
or something.
Alligators.
Jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu, still dull.
Still super boring, super long.
These scenes just extended way past their normal endpoint. That was the other thing. There was... It's not even there's so much story here. It's got to be 3 hours. It was just scenic bloat and everything.
Maybe they thought the audience was going to burst into applause after every line of dialogue.
Yeah.
So they needed long pauses between them.
Well, yeah. They were expecting people to develop a real deep connection with the movie, see it multiple times, and then create some kind of a culture around it where they are laughing. Every line has become part of the American psyche.
Yeah, they yell out responses. Yeah. They wave spoons.
Toast.
They wave alligators over their heads during the alligator scenes.
Throw boxing gloves. I paid attention.
You remember one thing.
I remember boxing gloves.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it is. It was. There's maybe 35 minutes worth of movie here that they extended to almost 3 hours.
So thank you, Lieutenant Last Name Withheld.
I mean,
this, simple pleasure.
It was a real tale of the immigrant experience in America, though.
No, it wasn't.
The Irish guy?
Yeah. Sure, the off-the-boat Irish guy who we first see in a three-piece tweed suit and a hat and
like a really good,
a really nice suit. And
yeah, I mean, except for like in a green tie, right? So we know he's Irish.
Well, just off fresh off the boat.
Well, green lining for his suit.
Just because he's fresh off the boat doesn't mean he's a poor guy in steerage. Like he could have been.
Didn't
on
he say something about how he
Carnival Cruise Line or
didn't
something?
Didn't he say he wanted to get it out of his immigrant clothes or something? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but he's wearing like a really nice.
Yeah,
suit.
Like I want those clothes.
Yeah.
So
you look good in those clothes.
Yeah. Can you guys get those for me?
I don't think so.
I mean,
we could write to Tommy Steele. He's still alive.
I mean, you could probably get them, like on eBay or something,
for like my for my wedding.
He's
like
a short, gift. So we might have to stretch them. That's what you do, right?
Yeah, you stretch clothes out.
Yeah, you just stretch them out.
That's how you get clothes.
You steam them and you stretch them.
you just tie them to a rack and you pull until the clothes are your size.
Okay, so we'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like we've made the sacrifice that most of America hasn't made to support our men overseas by seeing this movie.
Yeah.
So this is a three-hour movie, and I feel like we've run out of things to say a good 10 minutes before we normally.
Well, that's because it was a movie that didn't have like glaring problems with it, except slowness and dullness.
Yeah.
The songs were not particularly memorable, except for "Shilly Shally" and "Dilly Dallying."
Yeah, I mean that's going to stick with me forever.
Yeah, even though I've kind of forgotten how it goes already.
Something like "Shilly Shally, Dilly Dally, I'm going to go to China."
No, that was how it went.
It was something like that, but like there's just not. This was meant to be like a big roadshow production. That's why it had an overture and an intermission and why it's so long. And they wanted it to do the same business that Mary Poppins did. But like Mary Poppins has so many memorable moments. And this – it's like at every moment they're like, whoa. We did that in Mary Poppins. Let's try unmemorable this time.
Yeah.
And they just went out of the way to make it very bland. I will mention that in my research for it after we saw it, I noticed that the director, Norman Tokar, who directed a lot of Disney movies – it mentions on Wikipedia that he made the Dean Jones, Suzanne Plachette slapstick comedy, The Ugly Dachshund. So if anyone's ever seen the movie The Ugly Dachshund, which sounds amazing, I guess right into the Flophouse. What's the email address? Flophouse@theflophouse.com?
I think it's theflophousepodcast@gmail.com.
Okay.
The longest
and
most needlessly
everything, long. The email address, the URL, it's always ridiculously overlong. Just like this movie.
Yeah, non-memorable.
Yeah.
Just like the happiest. The other thing is, like, he wasn't that happy.
Yeah, why the happiest millionaire? We barely touch on his.
Look, there has to be a
war. His happiness,
and most of the thing is him being disappointed in people.
There has to be a reason that we're watching this movie. Like, he can't just be a happy millionaire. He has to be the happiest millionaire, guys.
Or just call it something.
That's
different.
What you learn in screenwriting.
Call it Alligator Boxer.
Oh man,
I like that one.
That's a good title. That's or what good. About like Mr. Marine?
Alligator boxer. Put some boxing gloves on him.
That's your poster. You got the poster right there.
So I'm going to push
and
right.
A green bow tie.
Because he's Irish, yeah.
Yeah.
Or you have an alligator in boxing gloves and then a butler standing next to him with like a tray with like a bottle of champagne and a mouse on it.
That tells me all I need to know about this movie.
Yeah. That sets you up to be disappointed by the film.
I'm going to push right past Final Judgments because I assume...
Good movie.
That everyone's going to say it's a bad,
good,
bad
best
movie.
Undiscovered classic.
Bad movie, everyone? Sure. Everyone?
I would say it was bad movie, yeah.
Just so we can get in a few more letters. We got a lot of letters.
Cracking the whip over here.
I got something for you guys, by the way.
Okay.
Before we get into letters, since I last really saw you guys, I went on a little trip.
Mm-hmm.
I went to
down memory lane.
I went to a place called Gen Con.
What?
The world's largest gaming convention in all of the world. And I got you guys because I like you guys a lot.
What?
Yeah, I got you guys something really cool.
Oh, and I didn't even get you anything when I was in Montana.
I got you
this past week.
The Bratz Fashion Party Fever collectible card game.
What?
Yep. You're seeing it for the first time.
Stuart is not lying. He's holding it in his hands. Bratz Fashion Party Forever.
This is the Fashion Party Fever.
Fever. Well, I like mine more.
They're super styling collectible cards.
Two-player starter set.
Yep. And it's for ages 8 and up.
I assume Fashion Party Fever is like a Contagion-style game where there's a Fashion Party bug that is going through the world.
It's similar to the popular game Pandemic. Yeah. So the taglines are dress up, throw a party, and dance all night long.
In card form.
So this was a 2003 TOTY winner. Property of the Year.
Oh, a Toddy Brat. Winner.
Oh, no, the Toddy.
That was the Toy of the Year Award. Oh.
So the gets its own. Cause
so,
if,
guys, since this
you could just say the TOY Awards, Toy of the Year. Toddy, you lose the word toy as the acronym.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, that's bad design.
You should call them. That is.
So I got you guys. I got you guys this because I know you love Bratz, and it's for two people.
Oh,
so
we love Bratz. Like, you don't love Bratz.
Well, I love Bratz too. But I thought if I got you guys a two-player game, I could watch you two play.
Now
just
can I
sit back?
Okay, that's weird.
Now can I turn the lights out in my corner and I'd watch you guys play?
So
while
this is like
I
one
drink,
of those any of those stripper
cocktails.
Serial killer movies where a stripper is dancing for a guy in the shadows.
Yeah,
in a private dance, and then he strangles her.
Well, I might strangle you.
Okay.
Guys, I want to...
But I want to watch you play first.
I want to read a little of the ad copy on the back of this, though.
Okay.
It says, dress up, throw a party, dance all night long.
Yeah, we heard that part.
Yeah, I did that.
Oh, sorry. Well, did you notice that night is spelled N-I-T-E?
I did not.
Didn't mention it.
Includes two totally hot 37-card decks.
So the decks are hot?
Dazzling dance floor play mat, rock and rule sheet...
Wait, even the rules sheet is rocking?
It is.
That's the only time I've ever heard rules as being described as cool.
Is rules spelled with a Z? Please tell me it is.
I'm sorry, it isn't.
Boo, Brett, you let
doesn't
me down.
Doesn't sound rocking.
Well, wait, hold on. Listen to this word that has been made up for the next thing.
Portuosity?
Oversized die and funkalish game pieces. Secret question decoder. Tons of super styling Brett's fashions and characters.
Funkalish?
Yeah. Oh, man. So apparently the goal is to swap fashion cards and complete the fashion passion prism, and all the Bratz will be strutting it on the dance floor in style.
Is that like the Triforce?
I have no idea.
The fashion passion prism?
Now,
it looks like
there's going to be a lot of Bratz character artwork on these things.
No noses and big lips and big eyes and tiny
My
waists.
Only request is you guys refrain from masturbating. This was a gift for playing games.
I cannot
not masturbate.
Make any promises.
You know that I have a fetish for women whose heads are basically golf balls with features attached. So no dice, no can do. That's why I like Bratz and Rachel Lee Cook.
Wow.
Take that star if she's all that.
That is amazing.
So.
Oh, and there's a super styling spa party sweepstakes. Ooh, oh. It ended in April 1st of 2004.
Okay. Yeah.
That was a hot commodity at Gen Con.
Oh, you
I don't want to.
Send a self-addressed stamped envelope to Super Stylin' Spa Party, 5909 Sea Otter Place, Carlsbad, California.
Wow.
So it is at Sea Otter Place.
Stuart, I don't want to insult you with this question, but on the other hand, I kind of want to know, how much does one pay for the Bratz card game?
It was $2 before tax.
So you and love the, each of us $1.
I do have to say the look,
tax.
The look on the saleswoman's face when I asked for it, priceless. I got to tell you.
Did a policeman follow you around for the rest of the convention?
No, I was not in any way the creepiest guy there. So awesome. So
it's
that
a
was
personal triumph.
That was my
for
gift
you.
To you guys.
Thank you so
readers,
much.
Readers, listeners at home.
It's like they're reading with their ears.
Yeah, that's.
Maybe I'll...
You got to put up a picture of it.
Yeah, I should take up a picture of this.
Or even link to the Amazon.com.
How about you
link.
Guys... Yeah, like you guys give it a thumbs up. Hold it. We'll deal with it in a minute.
Okay. Yeah, come on.
Before we get to the letters...
spoilers on the card game.
Before we get to the letters, I just want to thank T. Coburn and C. Simmons for their donations.
Thanks, guys. Very
generous donations.
Coburn and Simmons.
So there were a couple
Private
of...
Eyes.
There are a couple of mail things that we had to lose because of...
Mail things we had to lose. It's like people got their penises cut off?
Yeah. Like beards removed?
Because of the...
What other mail things are there?
Because of the lost episode. Some of the older emails I'm going to have to skip.
We could always do those at the end if we have time.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. All right. I'm going to move on.
Harsh Taskmaster. Harsh task bastard.
Angie, last name withheld.
Her last name is List.
She,
like Angie, is that character from that movie we just watched?
Yep,
he's a successful car executive in Detroit now. He's 100 years old.
The main thrust for email is whether any of us have seen the German movie Killer Condom.
That's a German movie?
Is it?
Troma released it years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I assumed it was a Troma film, but maybe they were distributing a German film.
But the
or maybe it's a remake of the Troma Killer Condom. I don't know.
The main thing I wanted to read from her is the second paragraph where she talks how much she laughs. She enjoys the show. She says the dick popcorn thing had me choking. I was trying to keep from laughing.
I'd say more. Choke on dick popcorn.
But I might turn into a dithering fangirl, and that's not very professional, though I have developed a bit of a thing for Elliot's way of saying anywho.
Yes.
So I just wanted to get that in there.
Hello.
Because I can't imagine anyone
else
like developing
being
anything but irritated by that.
Dan, you have to understand that things I do that irritate you delight and enchant the listeners.
Yeah, all right. Well,
thank you very much, writer. Angie, last name withheld.
This next one's called Heart Ticket to Hawaii. It relates to something that I showed you gentlemen before the podcast.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember back. All I can remember is shilly shallying, dilly dallying.
Yeah.
It says, "Hello, Dan, Stuart, and Elliot. I'm a big fan of the show, having hopped on the post AV Club bandwagon.
Thank you.
And I've started listening to every episode for the second time, much to the chagrin of my wife, who's usually trying to get some work done while I sit and laugh to myself across the room. Speaking of my wife,
an Andy Camp style figure.
Sure. Sorry, love. Got to listen to the podcast. Flop house, eh? Pop down the pub.
Sorry. Speaking of my wife.
Somebody's cheese fries. Andy Camp's cheese fries.
They're mm-hmm. hot fries.
Hot fries.
But they're cheese fries.
But
even
they're
though they're
called
hot fries.
They come in a plastic. Okay. Hot fries. All right. You've bested me in knowledge of Andy Camp based bar foods.
He says, speaking of my wife, I'm allowed to, we're married. On at least one episode of your show, you referenced the B, C, D, movie classic, Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
One of Dan's favorites.
While my wife was working for a now-defunct current TV show, she and some coworkers did a particularly faithful shot-for-shot remake of the You Got a Great Ass scene from the film, and I thought you'd appreciate both the attention to detail and the utter pointlessness of the project. It is here, and he gives a link. Again, love the podcast. Please continue to have an erratic release schedule. Otherwise, I won't find time to catch up with the Fresh Air podcast. That's from Will, last name with help.
Interesting that you're alternating between this and Fresh Air, which are two very different podcasts.
I think
what's her name on Fresh Air? Terry Gross, is that her name?
Terry Gross,
She talks a lot less about wormy boners and Invisible Maniac than we do.
Then I'm kind of glad I haven't been listening to this Fresh Air or whatever.
So we watched that Hard Ticket to Hawaii. It was very faithful.
Yeah, very funny.
We don't know. Now, a key piece of information that you leave out is whether that was your wife in the who had the titular great ass.
I knew Dan was going to ask this question.
Well, look. It was a
he
was
needs
a nice
to
ass. Gotta be a fucking creepazoid, dude.
No,
Dan
is one, a creepazoid, and two, he needs to put a name with a butt.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme of the day.
No, yeah. But I'm saying I, you know,
we had a conversation about this earlier with Dan.
I love personalities, Stuart. I don't just love body parts.
Sure. So you like a butt with personality.
I need to put a great personality with a great body part.
Okay.
So
his wife wasn't the guy with the frisbee in the neck.
Oh, it's true. I mean, like, we don't know. I mean, this could be a gay gentleman who his wife could be the.
Well, like he's
doing
wife in air quotes or something.
Yeah. Well, you know. I've heard that.
No, I guess you're right. That's fair.
Come on, Stuart. It's the 21st century. You got to expand your definition.
Mm-hmm.
See, it's all.
I'm trying to redefine marriage for you before you get married.
It's weird since it's Dan's character on the podcast has been established as a violent homophobe, and yet he seems to have some kind of reversal. What, Dan? What changed your opinion on this issue?
This was something that was placed upon me. I've always been very
Flophouse listeners know. If you've been paying attention to Flophouse continuity, he is horribly intolerant, and yet perhaps over the past week or two,
not homophobic
he's
at all.
Some kind of eye-opening experience.
All right, well, fine. I mean, like, I'll accept it. I mean, if this puts to bed the idea that I'm some sort of a homophobe,
well, I mean,
you're
not anymore. You used to be.
No, that's not true.
But I mean, you could have a relapse.
At any moment.
Yeah. Yeah, at any moment.
You never know.
And he also has a hook for a hand.
Yep, and I'm trying to take down the government.
Also been established. He really overloaded you with hooks.
So I forget what we were talking about, but I'll put that Hard Ticket to Hawaii.
Talking about your leering at this man's, possibly his wife.
Possibly his wife. And if not his wife, some other.
It was put on YouTube.
Daughter,
what else?
Yes, somebody's daughter and somebody's
mother,
maybe someday.
Daughter. Your fiance is someone's daughter. What the?
I hope not. The things he does with her.
I do terrible things to her.
The point was they went out of their way to do a shot-by-shot remake of a scene from a terrible movie, and all you could focus on was the female body parts.
That was a terrible movie that all it could focus on was the female body parts in it.
You're mixing the medium and the message.
The point of the movie was to have things blow up and for body parts to be bared. That's the point of Andy Sidaris' oeuvre.
Andy Sidaris is a particular favorite director of Dan's.
Yeah.
He did what other movies? Hard Ticket to
Savage
Malibu.
Beach. Savage Beach, Picasso Trigger.
Do or Die.
Do or Die,
is the one
Express.
Where there's a mercenary named Hot Dog in it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's all
wait,
scenes.
Wait. Hot Dog the movie?
No. Hot Dog the guy. I know it's easy to
But is
to
he named
mixed
after
up.
The food or the movie?
Well, his name's not Hot Dog the movie.
Now, this is Andy Sidaris, this is a former sports journalist. I think he worked for Sports Illustrated, who then made a career out of making movies basically where former Playboy models carried bazookas around in tropical climates and blew things up.
Carried them in front of their bazookas.
Yeah. Well, okay, wait. Now who is objectifying?
That's cheeky. Okay. Come on. That's lovably
and
cheeky.
This was cheeky.
He said it
too.
Ironically.
The video
too.
Was cheeky. That's what I'm saying.
That's gross. You're making me uncomfortable.
All right, well, let's
move
on.
My remark was very PG. Yours is, I don't know,
not so much,
X.
Especially the look on his face.
Yeah, that's the look of a man in a raincoat in a theater in the middle of the day.
Look, just because I'm visibly drooling and I've removed my pants doesn't mean that there's anything
I don't even know how you did that. I didn't see you do it.
Well, the
they're
drool
just gone.
Lubricated his pants.
Did they dissolve?
They slipped off.
His pants made out of sugar?
Yep.
Sugar pants McCoy.
Easy access.
That's why they call him that.
So, this is an email titled Dramatic Contest Results, and it's from Stuart, last name withheld.
Wait
Wellington?
A minute.
Stuart, did you get drunk and email
us? Spelled differently, but that could be a not too clever attempt to conceal.
Stuart's the best. Can you have more Stuart on the show? Signed, Stuart.
This says, greetings, floppers. I was listening to the Earwolf Challenge podcast, when to my pleasant surprise, I heard the dulcet tones of Dan McCoy. He was apparently the guest on a podcast called Beginnings. The Earwolf Challenge involves the reality television-style voting off of one of 10 podcast entries each week based on a challenge they are given. This week's challenge was about the best introduction, a seemingly important challenge. Always lead on a strong foot, people say. Beginnings led with the strong foot of Dan McCoy doing his patented silly voices. Well,
weak foot.
Voting is in, and needless to say, Beginnings was crushed immediately and without mercy, along with the judges pointing out how confident they were that this was the perfect choice for expulsion.
Oh.
This amused me to no end that Dan lost a contest he didn't enter. This crushing defeat is sure to elicit a mournful sigh from Dan.
It's just another moment from Dan's Charlie Brown-esque life.
P.S. This email seems harsh. I just wanted to let you know that the Flophouse is great, and Earwolf Challenge is not, so keep it up. This blow to Dan was probably just some nefarious plot by their sister podcast, How Did This Get Made? And I, by delivering this news, was merely a pawn in this great game between podcast rivals.
The great game, yes.
Well, you know, this is the Beginnings podcast. Elliot,
yeah,
you were also on this podcast. In the past.
I thought something was up with Dan. He seemed kind of down.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm. Unlike normal, Dan seemed like he was sighing a lot, drinking.
Sure.
Didn't have that joie de vivre that we know Dan to have.
It's all because of this email.
Yeah.
Beginnings is a nice podcast, a good podcast, run by a couple of very good guys about people, like comedians, how they got their start, I guess.
Yeah. Mark Bissy or BC, I don't know how to say his last name. I just know how to write it. And Andrew Beckerman. Good guys. Good podcast. I'll tell you something. The Earwolf Challenge is a run.
I've never heard of that. I don't know what it is.
Earwolf is Scott Aukerman's podcast empire. He started off with Comedy Death Ray, now Comedy Bang Bang, and there's a lot of podcasts under that title, including How Did This Get Made?
I'm so glad I don't pay attention to podcasts.
Yeah. But
I'll stick with comic books, a dying medium.
Well, here's what I have to say about this. So the Earwolf Challenge was run by one Matt Besser. And this will not be the first time Matt Besser has shit on something I was involved in. And
was it on Saturday Night Rewritten?
Yeah, and my career has gone fine since then, and so will to the careers of the Beginnings podcast gentlemen.
You're saying that losing this podcast contest
is not the worst thing that will ever.
It's not going to throw an obstacle into a career.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Because I was worried that I lived in a world that was insane. if losing a podcast contest
absurd, upside down,
irreparably harm somebody's life.
Yeah.
Then I would probably get on a rocket ship to Mars tomorrow or kill myself.
Luckily, taking a rocket ship to Mars would not kill you.
Oh, no. I'd get superpowers of some kind. You saw the Watchmen movie. You go to Mars and you get superpowers. Yeah. That's what happens, right?
Wait, what?
And you may...
So I'm going to do one last email now.
How do we enter a podcast contest so we can win it?
Yeah. We should pick something we're really good at, like throwing.
You know, that doesn't have anything to do with being in a podcast, though.
Yeah, but I mean, I bet really we're better at throwing stuff than other people who make podcasts. Yeah.
Sure.
Except for like a shot put podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd be very good on a throwing team, though.
Okay, then what would you be good at?
What would you be? Because you're the weak link,
karate?
Obviously.
I'll draw cartoons, and you can throw something.
Okay.
And Elliot will tell
like
us facts about U.S. history.
There you go. Okay.
So it's like a relay.
It's like a relay.
Okay.
One of those throwing, drawing U.S. history contests.
Speaking of which, I was very unhappy because your wife pointed out to me that while I was out of town, there was the relay race, the Battle of Brooklyn relay race in Brooklyn to commemorate the largest battle of the Revolutionary War, which happened right in our backyard. And I was out of town, so the three of us couldn't do it. Because I know you guys wanted to do a relay race with me.
Well, I mean, I'd be okay at the race part. Dan,
I mean, of the three of us, and
you
but
know
I do,
all the
but
facts.
I do run. I have run of the three of us. I think that
run to go get.
Yeah,
but
I know a bunch about the Battle of Brooklyn. True. It was August 27th, 1776.
Okay. This is not a history case. Okay.
What was the
at
weather
the
like?
Edge of what's now? I don't remember. At the edge of what's now Greenwood Cemetery. A number of British soldiers were foraging for watermelons.
Listeners, write in.
This is getting pretty good.
Tell how little you're interested in Elliot talking about the Battle of
Brooklyn.
The
first
What's this last
I'm
going to
do a final email before we get into our recommendations.
Final email.
This is from John, last name withheld, and it's about the last episode.
Is his last name Smith? Because then I think it's an alias.
Yeah, it could be. But this is about the Flophouse Bloopers and Practical Jokes episode.
Not a lot of practical jokes in that episode, or Sergio Aragone's cartoons.
It's a shame. If we could have gotten him, man, that would have been awesome.
I think we could have gotten him.
Well, let's look into it for next time, guys. Yeah. Get on that, Stuart.
He's probably working on Gru.
He's probably working on Gru. Yeah, from that magazine.
So John says, "My favorite part was when the radio background, no longer content with its current level of distraction, decided to drop all pretense and just start playing air horns." Example, around 11:20. So, I listened to it, and that is accurate.
So you're saying maybe this was a pirate broadcast that was just trying to get in the way.
I mean, you know, a lot of the hits are putting air horns in nowadays.
Oh, yeah, kids love air horns.
The musical quality of an air horn.
Yeah, it's jarring.
It's got a lot of...
It gets your attention.
It's got a nice timbre.
Timber?
What?
Yeah. Yeah. It's
timber.
No,
it's like when you cut a tree down.
When you talk about it.
Timber!
Like the tone, the musical tone is...
That's tonber.
Wait, timbre. Timbre is actually...
Timbre Amblin, yeah.
Sorry. So,
Starlet, timbre Amblin.
What's next, guys? Stuart.
This is where I lapped you. Tell me the story about this Battle of Brooklyn or something. No.
This is a
small skirmish between American guards and the British regulars.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
this is the part of the podcast where we recommend.
You're not even going to let me get to Lord Stirling's Maryland Regiment and its sacrificial charge.
Maybe I'll fade you out. You can at the end of the episode.
All right, it's an amazing story.
Okay.
So this is where we recommend something that in case you don't want to watch 3 hours of a story about a singing millionaire.
I don't know why you wouldn't.
But what's something you may have
seen?
He
barely spent money on anything in this movie. It wasn't like you expect it to be like Arthur or something like that, where the guy's just spending money stupidly on crazy things.
Yeah, like he's got a solid gold car.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Or solid gold hat.
He plays tennis with a giant
solid
diamond
ball.
Or something.
Giant diamond.
Or solid gold hits.
Yeah, because it's Quincy Jones.
Yeah.
He's the happiest millionaire.
He probably is. I mean, you know, he got married to Peggy Lipton. He's got all those
heir to
hits.
The Lipton's iced tea fortune.
Sure. Stewart,
his daughter is a successful actress.
Yeah, lovely woman in her own right.
Okay, don't get creepy.
What? But, I'm just she's pretty.
Don't get
all
creepy.
I'm saying is that
stop.
She's physically she, like you cannot object.
Do not bring her butt up. Okay.
I've never
Stewart.
Have
you ever
her,
heard like, this? Before?
It's kind of fucking creepy, right?
Of course.
She's a lovely woman.
Can we change the way we sit when we're doing this?
Yeah. I want to be as
attractive.
Far from Dan as possible.
I'm not,
and I don't want him to see my bottom.
Not making any lewd suggestions about her. I'm just saying.
It's all in your
objectively.
Countenance. It's in your countenance.
Yeah.
It's all lewd.
It's in your timbre or whatever you said.
Yeah. Right.
Stuart, are you going to recommend something?
I am going to recommend something, Dan. First off, Steve. You know, the guy
you're
who
gonna
wrote
You're going to recommend the name Steve.
No, that guy Steve
for
who wrote
babies.
It. I want to say you were right. I Saw the Devil was great. Thank you.
James was his actual name. Oh. Steve was
oh.
the name that
you
called
think everyone
him
everyone is named Steve.
No, it's okay.
Accident.
So
I
that
do
was
want
great.
To see that.
Thank you. The movie I'm going to recommend is a movie called The Collector, which is
Terrence Stamp. That one?
No.
Oh.
The premise of this movie is that you know this. There's a character who's like a thief who's been casing this you know this nice rich house, and he ends up kind of having to break in when he thinks his family's gone. Little does he know, there's also a serial killer has been casing this house. And when the thief goes in to break in,
so it's a low concept movie, is what you're saying.
Slice
yeah,
of life,
yeah. But it
cinema verity.
It was cool to see. It was cool how they made an attempt to actually spend some time on the geography of the house, and it's also nice to see a movie where you have like this horrible wacky serial killer who's tracking somebody who actually is skilled at evasion and like not being heard. So. And it's pretty gory, and there's some gross stuff in there. So if you like that stuff...
It's called The Collector?
The Collector.
Do you have to say
rated
it?
Rated R.
The Collector!
Playing at...
Stewart's House!
Lowe's Union Square. 315.
Regal Ewok.
Regal Ewok? Like King of the Ewoks?
Yep. Chief Chirpa.
Well, now he's going to have CGI eyes, so that'll be nice.
Elliot?
They'll probably be
oh,
purple.
Am I going next?
Yeah, why don't you go next?
I think I will recommend... I haven't seen a lot of movies lately. I was out of town for about a week, and I didn't see any movies along that time. But before I left, I finally watched Sugarland Express, which I'd never seen before. And
that's
I really,
a good one.
I really liked it a lot, and it shows you a different direction Spielberg could have gone in if he hadn't become like kind of this blockbuster director. And I enjoyed it a lot. It was very, and I've overlooked it for a long time because... It's one of the forgotten movies in his filmography, but it was really good.
And I went last because I, too, have been out of town and have not watched any movies, and I don't really have any movies.
So you desperately – you thought I would give you another 30 seconds to buy time.
I saw Arthur on the Plane, speaking of Arthur, the Arthur remake.
Oh,
was that
okay,
the sequel
the
to Snakes on a Plane? Arthur on a Plane?
Which – I mean that's a movie I would recommend watching on a plane. Like, I don't think it was that great in general, but there were some parts that were good. Our buddy John Hodgman, not really our buddy, but someone that we've
my
talked
buddy.
To. Yeah, not my buddy. Although he's a lovely man.
He's a very nice person. He was very mean to me most of the time.
But he had a funny couple of scenes in it. He showed up. I was delighted to see that. But I don't really have much to say. I did watch... I did go and see Avenue Q off Broadway last night.
Is it going to recommend a movie? Or?
If you live in New York.
I want to recommend this joke my friend told me. Like,
if you live in New York,
I had a good sandwich the other day. Maybe you should eat that.
Now, speaking of,
these shoes are comfortable.
Now, in lieu of a recommendation, I'd like to do a plug, actually, for a friend.
Oh, well, I'll do a plug when you're done.
I went to see Avenue Q in part because my friend Rob Morrison, who I used to be in a sketch group with, is now in Avenue Q off Broadway playing multiple characters. And he also has a rock band called The Hollows. And he put out an album recently, which was very good. I bought it, Googled The Hollows, Belong to the Earth, I believe is the name of the album. And I would recommend it. You can go to the website and listen to a couple tracks, see if you like it.
All right.
What, Ali? You're rolling your eyes at me.
I didn't
over
roll
there.
My eyes. Okay. I nodded my head in a condescending manner.
Yeah,
completely different.
What did you want to plug?
I wanted to plug my next movie screening. If this is up in time, it's going to be Wednesday, the 7th of September.
Yeah.
At 7:30 p.m. at 92 at Tribeca, I'm showing Shadow of a Doubt, my favorite, one of my favorite movies of all time, and my favorite Hitchcock movie. and one that is not given the credit it deserves as his first masterpiece film, I think. And comedian and Daily Show producer Rory Albanese will be joining us after the movie to talk about it. He's never seen it, and we'll see what he thinks of it. But it's a really great movie.
Yeah.
Joseph Cotten, Teresa Wright, Hume Cronin's film debut, Patricia Collinge.
And Rory is very funny. If you are a podcast listener, you would know him as the American from the Bugle podcast.
That's right. He plays the American on the Bugle. So, if you're a podcast listener.
Well, I'm not.
There's
I'm saying,
a billion podcasts.
No, but, yeah. but if you're I'm saying that if you're listening to this, perhaps you're a fan of the venue, the medium of
That's
podcasting.
But he does play the American on the Bugle.
So come on out to that. In the meantime.
Please do. It'll be fun.
So, Elliot, get ready to keep telling your story,
okay.
Which I will then fade out. But I've been Dan McCoy.
I've been Stuart Wellington.
And this is the Battle of Brooklyn, August 27th, 1776. America's forces have gathered in the borough of Brooklyn, then its own city. I guess it was called Flatbush or whatever at the time.
Yes.
The British soldiers are advancing.
I don't remember any of the songs. Do you?
There was the one about... no shilly shallying, no dilly dallying,
yes.
Deet dot deet dot do.
I'm gonna go to China right now.
Yeah, and the fortuosity, da da dee da 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 dee da da dee.
Fortuosity, you got that fortuosity.
No, again, you're singing the Bear's Necessities. And
then, there's that one about Chim Chimmery, Chim Chimmery, Chim Chim,
nope.
Chum Millionaire.
Mary Poppins.
Oh, what about?
Scooby Doo, bop, bop, boop, bop, ba doo, da da ba doo.
That's just a scat version of In the Mood.
Scooby Doo, bop, boo, boo, boop, boop, boop.
That's the night court theme.